欢迎收看美国之音的焦点对话，我是樊东宁。中国国家主席习近平声称当今的世界大势是东升西降，但美国总统拜登警告说打赌美国会输从来都是一个糟糕的赌注。那么虽然中国已经快速崛起为世界第二大经济体，并有预测认为中国经济总量将在未来十年超越美国，但是不少问题也日益浮现，包括人口老化、能源短缺、地产债务危机。而国际主流社会则对中国观感恶化，抗衡中国不断扩张的影响力建成共识。面对内外挑战，中国是会步入衰退还是继续东升？这又将如何影响美中关系？美国之音记者莫宇采访了约翰霍普金斯大学高级国际研究学院的教授哈尔布兰兹，还有普林斯顿大学政治学与国际关系学的教授范亚伦，以及美国斯坦福大学弗里曼史波格利国际问题研究所的研究员梅慧玲。那么今天的节目，我们就邀请美国这三位资深的中国问题专家，针对这些话题来进行深入的分析。
So we argue not that China is a declining power, but that it is a peaking power, in the sense that its days of fastest and easiest growth are likely behind it, and in the sense that it's facing more international friction and international resistance than it has in the past. And a number of those, that slow growth results from a variety of factors. It results from a slowing of economic reform. It results from demographic problems. It results from environmental and resource problems. But basically, we've already seen a significant slowdown in Chinese growth since about 2008, which looks likely to continue with time. At the same time, China's facing more significant international resistance. If you look at the Quad, if you look at AUKUS, if you look at the way that countries around the world are becoming more skeptical of engagement with China and more concerned about Chinese ambitions, it leads you to the conclusion that China is facing a world that's more difficult for its ambitions than was the case in the past. And so this is why we think that China should be viewed as a peaking power. It's a power that's already strong, but in some ways its days of easiest growth and expansion are behind it.
I think it's a little early to say. Power is always relative, and it can be measured in various ways. So one question that will be relevant to that discussion is whether China can continue to sustain high levels of economic growth, or whether it's now headed into a period of even slower growth than it's experienced in the last couple of years. And there are a number of reasons to think that that might be the case. China has some longstanding problems that it hasn't yet fully addressed with its environmental conditions, population, aging population. And also, it has yet really to formulate and to begin to implement a new growth policy that doesn't rely as heavily on investment in infrastructure, residential construction, doesn't rely as heavily on exports. And also, adding to the uncertainty is the fact that Xi Jinping in recent years has gone even further in asserting the party state's control over the economy, over the high-tech companies that were thought to be the most innovative. So there are a lot of obstacles and problems that China faces in sustaining its growth. And if it doesn't succeed in doing that, the slope of the curve of the increase in its power is going to diminish. But power isn't only about economic growth, of course. It's also about military capabilities and political influence. And there, I think the question is whether China's behavior has now provoked sufficient response on the part of other countries, not only the United States, but U.S. allies in Asia and perhaps in Europe too, to begin to cooperate more closely in counterbalancing what's undoubtedly been a growth in Chinese power over the last couple of decades. And there it's too early to say.
So, you know, I think it's largely irrelevant. You know, whether it's in decline, all of this is is relative. You know, even if the Chinese economy slows down and it's stagnant, China's still going to be the number two economy in the world. We're also assuming, at least in economic terms, that something happens to China that has no effect on the rest of the world, which is not how economic interdependence is working these days. So even if China doesn't continue to rise the same level, the same pace economically that it has in the past, it's still going to have the resources necessary to be a global power, to have influence on the global stage, and to create a lot of headaches for the United States. And so I would say at this point, we could consider China a great power. Now, whether they'll surpass the United States, whether the United States, or whether, China will decline itself, all of that is still up for debate. But I think we can all agree that at least to date, China has reached that great power status.
I think there's a risk in beginning to imagine that China has peaked and that its power, its relative power from here on is going to diminish. First of all, that may not be true. Secondly, even if it is true, it could actually contribute to more aggressive behavior on the part of the CCP regime. And finally, I'm a little concerned that people who talk this way may then, in the next sentence, say, we don't really need to worry about this so much. Perhaps we don't need to do as much to try to counter China's growth. We can relax and let events take care of themselves. I think that would be a mistake. China is a very big country. It's been growing very rapidly. It has a lot of momentum. It isn't going to become weak overnight. It's going to continue to get stronger, albeit perhaps at a slower pace than it has in recent years. And if that's right, even if that's right, I think we could be in for a decade or more period in which competition, rivalry is going to be intensifying, and China will, in certain respects, be continuing to get stronger, even if it's beginning to reach a point at which its relative power is going to start declining.
Historically, revisionist powers, so countries that want to reorder the international system, have become most aggressive when they start to worry that their window of opportunity is closing. They've basically peaked and are on the verge of declining. And once that happens, they become more willing to run risks and behave aggressively to try to lock in gains while they still can. And this was the case with Germany before World War I. It was the case with Imperial Japan prior to World War II. And so we worry that you could see a similar scenario with China today, whereas the future looks to start more menacing and more threatening from a Chinese perspective. Xi Jinping and the people around him will be more inclined to run significant risks to achieve gains while they still can. Well, it means that the United States has really a twofold challenge. It has to gear up for what could be a very long competition with China, lasting years or even decades, but it also needs to prepare for a particularly intense phase of the competition in the coming decade. And so one of the arguments we make is that the danger of Chinese aggression vis-a-vis Taiwan may be highest in the late 2020s for some of the reasons that we've talked about. And so the United States needs to make really intensified and strenuous efforts to shore up deterrence in the Taiwan Strait by boosting its own military capabilities, by pushing the Taiwanese very hard to invest heavily in their own asymmetric capabilities, and by trying to rally more multilateral resistance to whatever sort of aggression China might try.
That I don't think there's this view that China is going to lash out if it has any economic problems at home. At least in my readings of Chinese strategy and doctrine, I don't see any sort of indications of this or any history. I think more likely we will be dealing with a confident China, and that's going to be the problem for the foreseeable future. And I'm not suggesting that China would never shift in that direction. I have just seen no indication even in the past that is a trend in Chinese behavior. Usually if things are going poorly domestically, China actually focuses on those domestic political issues and is less ambitious abroad. And so I think that is a more likely pathway if indeed things become more problematic at home. Well, I think there have been waves of this in Chinese thinking for a long time, which again is a lot of wishful thinking on the part of Chinese strategists, whether it was after the financial crisis or after the fall of the Soviet Union, this constant hope that an era of multipolarity would come forth and that U.S. power would be checked somehow. And of course, the United States, its power, its strategies, they also change over time. And there's some points in U.S. history in which the United States is more dominant than others. But I think it would be a mistake to think that the United States is on the decline. If anything, China is going to have to contend with a much more active United States in the future. And so it's not going to be the case that Chinese influence will increase because U.S. influence is going to decrease. If anything, it is going to be a competition to see, you know, which side rules, norms, ideas, models prevail. And I think at least for the past couple hundred years, history has shown that the United States is pretty good at that game.
Well, I think if you look at what Chinese analysts and Chinese leaders say, you know, they've been predicting the relative decline of American power for decades and their own rise. They've become encouraged, I think, increasingly by the events of the last 15 years or so, going back to the global financial crisis in 2008. I think when they look at the growth of populism in the West, some political instability, the reactions to the COVID pandemic, they take all of that as a sign of the weakness and increasing fragility of Western institutions. And that's certainly the way they talk. At the same time, I think that I hope that they still have a kind of healthy respect for the resilience of democratic institutions and American political institutions, because they've seen this before. They know that there have been periods when people thought the United States was in decline and it managed somehow to bounce back. And they have to be concerned that that may be the case again. However, I worry a bit that if they do believe that, they may be more inclined to think that they're under some time pressure to take advantage of a period when they still have a good deal of momentum and when the United States and the Western democracies still seem to be entangled in their own domestic and internal problems. So, you know, if the Chinese leaders thought it was inevitable that they really were going to win no matter what and they could just sit back and relax, that would probably be fine. It's that they're not quite sure of that, I think, that makes them push harder.
I think that the United States certainly has internal challenges. I mean, that's undisputable. And I think that there's certainly concerns about the stability of the American political system at the moment. That said, I don't think there's much of a case that the United States is in, you know, long-term economic decline. If the United States has occupied roughly the same piece of the global economy for about the last 50 years. U.S. GDP has been about 20 to 25% of the overall global economy since the early 1970s, and it appears relatively stable. The United States has a relatively healthy demographic profile. It has political institutions that have proven capable of the sort of renewal that the United States needs right now in previous instances. And so I think the fundamentals of American power are relatively strong, in part also because the United States can draw on the assistance of allies and partners around the globe. And so I think that the United States actually has a relatively healthy power trajectory, assuming it can address some of its internal challenges.
Yes, I don't think the policies that are currently being pursued are too hostile or that they're in any way irresponsible. I think in certain respects, they're not yet tough enough. I think if I have a concern over the next few years, it's not that the United States is going to be unduly hostile, but that the U.S. and the current administration, for a variety of reasons, will have difficulty in sustaining what I would consider to be the appropriate tough policies in dealing with China. There'll be a lot of pressure, for example, to not to increase defense spending. the so-called progressive wing of the Democratic Party doesn't want to spend more money on defense. There'll be a lot of pressure from people who think that if we have tensions with China over a variety of issues, we're not going to be able to achieve cooperation on climate change, for example. So people who want and think climate change is the top priority are pressing the administration to cool off and back away, perhaps, from some of the things that it started to do. There'll be a lot of pressure, there already is, from business interests in the United States who are unhappy with some of the policies that the Trump administration introduced, particularly tariffs. And some of that is legitimate. I think some of those tariffs probably could be eliminated without threatening the future security or prosperity of the United States. But overall, I think, as I mentioned earlier, the notion that we need to restructure our overall relationship with China rather than trying to go back to business as usual is the right one. But there's going to be a lot of pressure not to do that. So I'm more worried about underreaction than I am about overreaction.
I think the United States is really only beginning to shift toward what you might consider a hostile policy toward China. There's been a significant amount of rhetoric about competition with China. There have been some important policy moves. So the Department of Defense is now focusing primarily on Western Pacific defense issues as a top priority. I think that's helpful. I think the United States has made some constructive moves with respect to tech competition, but we're still really in the early phases, and the United States is still trying to figure out how it wants to deal with issues like economic entanglement, how hard of a line it wants to take in the tech rivalry, what allies and what capabilities it might try to bring to bear to strengthen deterrence in the Western Pacific and other theaters. And so I think in many ways that the policies that you're seeing now are just a belated response to the rise of China and to the increasing assertiveness and belligerence of the Chinese leadership over the past.
You know, China has no idea what a hostile United States looks like. I mean, this is one of the areas of resentment, I think, among a lot of U.S. strategists, is that the United States has been relatively welcoming to China, has facilitated the rise of China. And even now that we have some competitive strategies in which maybe we're pushing back at international institutions, I mean, this is nothing compared to the level of hostility that the United States could engage in. China relies on the United States and its allies. 60% or over of its trade is with U.S. partners and allies. The United States is not cutting that off. You know, maybe there are some restrictions on export controls for dual use technologies. But in terms of the level of hostility, there's a lot of room of things that the United States could be doing that it hasn't started to do yet.
I think the general direction of relations between the United States and China, and more than that, I would say between China and the West, the advanced democracies more generally, it is towards more intense and open rivalry across a range of fronts, military, economic, technological, ideological. I don't think that's going to change. The question is how fast and how far is that going to go? I guess I would say my expectation is that we're headed for a period in which those tensions will be higher than they've been, and they will be sustained in that way over a considerable period of time. Related to my earlier point, the concern I have about underreaction on the part of the United States and the other democratic countries is that it may encourage miscalculation on the part of the Chinese leadership. If China's leaders become convinced, as they say they believe, that it's not them who have passed their peak, but us, that we, the United States, the democratic countries, are in a period now of accelerating relative decline, if they don't think that we will stand up for our principles, if they don't think the United States will defend its allies, they're more likely to make miscalculations and to behave aggressively in ways that could provoke a response and cause a serious crisis.
So as I said, I think that the coming years are going to be a very tense phase in U.S.-China relations because Chinese power is beginning to peak and because China will face a number of incentives to begin acting more aggressively during this decade. And so it's very difficult to predict whether that will lead to war, whether it will lead to higher levels of diplomatic hostility, but something short of war, or something other than that. But my sense is that we're probably in for a very rough decade in U.S.-China relations, in part because the two countries will sort of be testing each other's intentions, probing each other's strengths and their defenses, and trying to figure out exactly where the red lines are in the relationship.
You know, I think the Biden administration takes leading with diplomacy very seriously and revitalizing U.S. alliances. I think we've seen U.S. allies and partners much more willing to push back against China in the region. And of course, instead of moderating its behavior, China has been doubling down in response, whether it is increasing military activities, you know, across the Taiwan Strait or in the Yellow Sea or in the South China Sea. So I think we're going to see a lot more jockeying back and forth between the United States, its partners, and China as tensions continue to increase.
好的，感谢您收看本集节目，也提醒您，来宾发表的是个人观点，不代表美国之音。我是樊东宁，祝各位平安，我们下次节目再会。